Welcome back to Science TLDR, the podcast that, well, you know, we try to take these really complex scientific papers and kind of condense them down into something a little easier to digest.
Right.
And today we're diving into a paper titled Accelerated Enzyme Engineering by Machine Learning Guided Cell-Free Expression.
Oh, this is a cool one.
Yeah, it was published in Nature Communications.
Nice, Nature Communications.
Yeah, and it really tackles this, I think, a pretty significant bottleneck in enzyme engineering, which is just the sheer amount of data you need to, you know, really figure out how an enzyme sequence relates to its function.
Yeah, it's a huge problem. You need tons and tons of data. And so what's really cool about this paper is that it's proposing this new platform that combines cell-free systems with machine learning.
Mm.
And they're applying it to enzyme engineering, which is a really cool concept.
Okay, so let's break that down a little bit. First, what is this MICBA enzyme that they keep talking about?
Yeah, so MICBA is this amide bond-forming enzyme, and it's found in this bacteria called Marinactinospora thermotolerans. Kind of a mouthful.
Yeah.
But amide bonds are everywhere. They're in a ton of different molecules, especially pharmaceuticals. They're the links, the chemical links that hold a lot of drugs together. So
the researchers are essentially trying to optimize this bacterial enzyme to create specific pharmaceutical compounds.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Okay, so how common is that? Like, how common is it to use enzymes in this way, I guess?
Yeah, well, you know, the traditional way of making a lot of these amide bonds is through chemical synthesis, but it can be kind of a pain. You know, it's inefficient. You end up with a lot of waste.
Right.
And so the idea of using what are called biocatalysts, which are essentially enzymes that are used for industrial or manufacturing purposes, you know, that's kind of the alternative.
Okay, so it's a little bit more of a green approach, a little bit more sustainable.
Exactly.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay, so how did they go about exploring MICBA's potential? Did they just throw a bunch of stuff at it and see what happened?
Well, yeah, kind of. At first, they just wanted to see what MICBA could do in its natural state. So they tested it on over 1,100 different reactions just to see, you know, what kinds of molecules it could actually make.
Mm-hmm. Like a trial by fire.
Yeah.
Did it perform well?
Surprisingly well, actually. They found that MICBA could make 11 known pharmaceutical compounds.
Wow.
And it even showed what we call chemoselectivity and stereoselectivity.
Okay, now hold on. For those of us who don't live and breathe organic chemistry all the time, can you just break down what those terms mean?
Yeah, sure. So chemoselectivity basically means that the enzyme can tell the difference between different chemical groups, and it'll only react with one over the others. Uh-huh. And then stereoselectivity means it can actually control the 3D spatial arrangement of the atoms and the molecules that it makes. So both of these are really important for making sure that you're getting the right molecule in the end.
So it's not just building something, it's building something very specifically.
Exactly, exactly.
Okay, so MICBA has some serious potential then as a biocatalyst. What did the researchers do next? Did they try to soup it up a little
bit? Yeah, so they turned to cell-free protein engineering. So this basically means you're assembling DNA sequences that code for different versions of MICBA, and then you produce those proteins outside of a living cell.
Okay, now why would you do it outside of a living cell? What's the advantage there?
Well, speed and scalability, it's way faster than having to grow cells in a lab. You know, you bypass all that time and those resources, and it lets you test a lot of different enzyme variants really quickly.
So it's almost like 3D printing, but for enzymes.
Yeah, it's like you're rapidly prototyping these enzymes, seeing what works. So in this case, they targeted 64 amino acid residues around MICBA's active site, which is, you know, the region that's super important for its catalytic activity. And they went through and made mutations at each of these positions and ended up creating a library of over 1,200 single mutant variants. They called this a hotspot screen.
Okay, what was the goal of doing that? What were they hoping to find with this hotspot screen?
The goal was to identify mutations that could make MICBA better at producing three specific target molecules. They were moclobemide, metoclopramide, and sinchicane.
Okay.
And they picked these three because they all have different structures. You know, they're different levels of complexity. So it was a good way to test out their platform.
A good testing ground.
Yeah.
Okay. So they've got all these mutant MICBA enzymes now. How did they bring machine learning into all of this?
So they took all the data from that single mutant screen and used it to train machine learning models. The idea was to have these models predict how combinations of mutations, like, you know, if you had a double or triple mutant,
Right.
how those would affect MICBA's activity.
So instead of having to test like every single combination in the lab, which would probably take forever,
Oh yeah, way too long.
they were trying to let the computer do the hard work, the heavy lifting.
Exactly,
Yeah.
yeah. They wanted to use machine learning to just sort of point them in the right direction,
Yeah.
you know, tell them which variants to focus on.
So it's almost like having a map to navigate through all these like possible mutations.
Exactly, a map. That's a good way to put it. But of
Okay.
course, they weren't going to just trust the machine learning models completely.
Right.
So they also did something called iterative saturation mutagenesis campaigns, which is more of a traditional directed evolution approach to kind of double check the model's predictions and, you know, make sure it was on the right track.
Always good to have a little bit of skepticism in science.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So then the question was, did the machine learning predictions actually hold up? And well, that's where things get really interesting.
So, spill the beans. How did those machine learning predictions actually do?
They did really well, surprisingly. Like, even with these pretty simple machine learning models, in a lot of cases that they actually did better than the results they got from the iterative saturation mutagenesis. They found these highly active mutants that the traditional methods just completely missed.
So they're saying that the machine learning was actually finding better enzymes than the kind of tried and true method.
Yeah, in several cases, yeah. And they give some specific examples. Like, for one of the molecules, the model identified this one mutation that by itself, it actually made the enzyme worse. Like, the activity went down.
Oh, interesting.
But then when they combine it with some other mutations, that same mutation that seemed bad at first, it ended up leading to this huge boost in the enzyme's activity.
Wow, so it's like it's not just about looking at individual mutations in isolation, it's about like how they all work together,
Yeah.
right?
Exactly. Yeah, it's all about these what we call epistatic interactions, like how the effect of one mutation depends on what other mutations are present.
Yeah.
And that's something that's really, really hard to predict with traditional methods, but this study shows that machine learning might actually be able to crack that code.
So it's almost like the machine learning is able to see the forest through the trees, whereas the traditional methods are kind of getting bogged down in the details of the individual trees, so to speak.
Yeah, I like that analogy. It captures the idea well. So, to give you a concrete example, let's look at that mocolibamide molecule they were trying to make. Remember that antidepressant drug?
Yeah.
So, with the wild type MICBA, they could only get about 12% conversion. Like, only 12% of the starting material was actually getting turned into mocolibamide.
Okay.
But after they did a few rounds of this machine learning guided engineering, they ended up with this quadruple mutant, meaning it had four specific amino acid changes.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah. And that mutant got them up to 96% conversion.
So they basically engineered MICBA that's like 8 times better at making this drug.
Yeah, pretty much. It's a massive improvement.
That's pretty impressive. What about the other two molecules they were looking at? Metoclopramide and Syntacane, was it?
Yeah. So for metoclopramide, they actually got almost a 30-fold improvement in activity compared to the wild type enzyme. Syntacane was a little trickier, but they still saw a significant improvement.
So it seems like this platform really is showing some promise in terms of being able to generate these like specialized enzymes to produce specific pharmaceutical compounds.
Yeah, and they didn't just stop there. They actually went on to apply their platform to six more pharmaceutical compounds just to really show that this approach could be used more broadly.
Oh, wow.
And they saw pretty good improvements with those as well, ranging from like a 1.6-fold increase all the way up to a 34-fold increase in yield.
Wow. That's a pretty wide range. What do you think accounts for those differences?
It probably comes down to the specific chemistry involved in each case. You know,
Yeah.
some reactions might be inherently more difficult for the enzyme to catalyze, so it would make sense that you'd need more modifications to get a big improvement in those cases.
Right. It's not a one size fits all approach. You got to kind of tailor it to the specific molecule you're working with.
Yeah, that's a good point. This platform is a really powerful tool, but it's not, you know, magic. There's still going to be some trial and error, some optimization involved.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they've shown that they can create these, you know, these specialized enzymes that are really good at making these specific molecules. But do they still have the other properties that we want? Like, do they still have that selectivity that you were talking about earlier?
Yeah, that's a great question. And the good news is that they do. They found that even after all this engineering, the enzymes still had that high regioselectivity and stereoselectivity.
That's really important, especially in pharmaceutical applications,
Yeah.
where you really need to make sure you're getting the right molecule and not some weird byproduct.
Exactly. You don't want any surprises when you're dealing with drugs, that's for sure. So this finding suggests that this approach, you can really boost the activity without sacrificing the enzyme's specificity.
Okay, that's good to know.
Yeah.
So we've talked a lot about, the specifics of this study, but I want to step back for a second, just kind of reiterate this idea of combining cell-free systems with machine learning. It seems like that's really the secret sauce here, right?
Definitely. The cell-free systems give you that speed and scalability. You can screen tons of different enzymes really quickly.
Yeah.
And then the machine learning provides the brains, I guess you could say. It helps you sift through all that data and identify the most promising candidates.
It's like a high throughput screening robot that's being guided by some super smart algorithm.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. But of course, like with any new technology, there are still some challenges.
Sure, what are some of those?
Well, the researchers themselves point out that the choice of machine learning model is really important. You've got to pick the right one for the job, and the quality of the training data is crucial too.
Yeah, that makes sense. Garbage in, garbage out, as they say.
Exactly. And then, there's always room for improvement with the cell-free systems as well, like making them even more efficient, more scalable, so we can really put to the boundaries of this whole approach.
Well, overall, it seems like this study really gives us a glimpse into the future of enzyme engineering. It's amazing to see how these different fields, like biology, engineering, and computer science, are all coming together.
Yeah, it's really exciting. And I think this is just the beginning. As these technologies get more advanced, we're going to see even more breakthroughs in enzyme engineering with applications in, pretty much every industry you can think of.
So it's not just about pharmaceuticals. We're talking about like agriculture, material science.
Exactly. Yeah. The possibilities are pretty much endless. But we also need to be mindful of the ethical implications, right?
Of course. With any powerful new technology, we need to make sure we're using it responsibly.
Yeah.
Like, we need to make sure that if we can make life-saving drugs more efficiently, that everyone has access to them.
Exactly. Yeah. That's really important. And then there's also the potential for misuse, right? We
Right.
need to be careful about that. We need to have clear guidelines in place to prevent any unintended consequences.
So it sounds like this technology comes with a lot of responsibility as well.
Absolutely. It's a reminder that scientific advancements don't happen in a vacuum.
Yeah.
We need to be thinking about the societal impacts as well.
Well said. Well, this has been a fascinating dive into the world of enzyme engineering. It's incredible to see how far this field has come, and I'm excited to see where it goes from here.
Me too. I mean, this study is a perfect example of how interdisciplinary research can really lead to some game-changing discoveries.
So before we wrap things up, are there any major takeaways you want to leave our listeners with?
Yeah, I think there are three big ones. First, this study really shows the power of combining cell-free systems with machine learning. It's a really promising approach for accelerating enzyme engineering and creating these, highly specialized enzymes. Second, it's a reminder that we always need to be thinking about the broader implications of these scientific advancements, the ethical considerations, the potential societal impacts. And then finally, I think this study just highlights the importance of collaboration, bringing together experts from different fields. That's how we're going to solve these big challenges.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Well, thank you so much for joining me on this deep dive into the cutting-edge world of enzyme engineering.
It's been a pleasure. And to all our listeners out there, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep pushing the boundaries of science.
So we've seen that this platform has like the potential to create these super specialized and efficient enzymes. But what does that actually mean for the bigger picture? Like where does this actually get applied? Where could this go?
Oh man, the possibilities, they're huge. Like think about all sorts of industries. Pharmaceuticals is probably the most obvious one.
Right.
The one that's going to be affected first.
And we've already seen that they were able to engineer this MICB/A to make a bunch of drugs that are already out there more efficiently. But could you actually use this technology to, like, discover new drugs?
Totally, yeah. Think about it. If you could design an enzyme that could just make this super complicated drug molecule that's just impossible to make right now, or it costs, you know, $1 bazillion to make with traditional methods,
right,
that would totally open up this whole new world of drug development.
And what about, like, personalized medicine? Could you see a future where they're, like, tailoring enzymes to a specific person's needs?
Yeah, that's a really cool idea. If you can engineer these enzymes with this much control, you know, being able to tweak their activity so precisely, then maybe you could create these personalized biocatalysts for like targeted therapies.
Wow.
Like, imagine enzymes that are designed to just go after cancer cells or to fix some kind of genetic defect.
It sounds like science fiction, but it's amazing to think that this could actually be, like, a real possibility.
Yeah.
But pharmaceuticals isn't the only place where this could have an impact. What about some other industries?
Oh, yeah. Agriculture is another one that this could be huge for.
Hmm.
Like, imagine you could engineer enzymes to make crops more nutritious, or to create pesticides and herbicides that are way more sustainable.
Yeah, that would be huge for food security and for the environment.
Totally. And don't forget about material science. I mean, you could use these enzymes to make biodegradable plastics, or even to build, like, completely new types of materials that have these crazy properties.
It sounds like the applications are kind of limitless, right? Like, you're only limited by your imagination.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, there are always going to be some practical limitations, but the potential is definitely huge.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we also have to keep in mind the ethical implications of all of this.
Oh, absolutely. You know, like we were saying before, with any technology that's this powerful, you have to be really careful about how you use it. You have to think about, like, accessibility and equity.
Right.
You know, if we can make these life-saving drugs more cheaply, we need to make sure that everybody can get them.
Yeah, for sure. And, like, with anything that can, you know, modify biological systems, there's always the potential for misuse, right? So we have to be really careful about that. We have to think about the regulations, the guidelines that need to be in place.
It sounds like this technology really presents us with like these amazing opportunities, but also, like, some big responsibilities.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. This research is a good reminder that, you know, science isn't just about making discoveries. We have to think about the impact those discoveries are going to have on the world.
Well, this has been an absolutely fascinating deep dive into this whole world of enzyme engineering. It's really incredible to see how far it's come.
Yeah.
And even more exciting to imagine where it could go from here.
I know, right? This study is a fantastic example of, you know, what can happen when you get biologists, engineers, and computer scientists all working together.
So before we sign off, any key takeaways that you want to leave our listeners with?
Absolutely. I think the big three are, one, the study shows how powerful it can be to combine these cell-free systems with machine learning.
Right.
It's really a game changer for enzyme engineering. And then two, we always have to remember to think about the bigger picture, the ethical implications, the societal impacts.
Yeah.
You know, we can't just focus on the science itself. And then finally, you know, I think this study is just a great example of the power of collaboration. When you bring different experts together, you can achieve some really incredible things.
Well said. Well, thank you so much for joining me on this deep dive into the cutting edge world of enzyme engineering. It's been a pleasure having you.
The pleasure was all mine. And to all our listeners out there, keep learning, keep asking questions, and keep pushing the boundaries of science.
And we'll see you next time on Science TLDR.